Vernacular Unredacted.
Happy Friday, Redactorinos, unless you're listening to this on another day, in which case, happy whatever day it is. We've had a huge amount of correspondence over the last few days, and honestly, the amount of new information coming in has been a little overwhelming. We had hoped to launch episode 2 today, but some of the new evidence changes the facts under discussion, and we need time to digest it properly so we can figure out the best way to bring it to you. So here's the plan. Episode 2 will now drop on Monday the 15th of September, and episode 3 will follow on Wednesday the 17th of September. While I'm here, I thought I'd answer some of the most common questions coming into the inbox. Quick disclaimer, what follows is my opinion, though it's based on access to a lot of privileged information. Question 1, am I a real man? Yes, I am. I've taken steps to shield the identities of those supporting the podcast, because frankly, there's a genuine fear of retaliation from the society. As for me, for the past 20 years, I've balanced my commercial career with a sideline in disability employment advocacy, running workshops on employment law, fighting for stronger services, and defending the voice of blind people in governance at charities. Question 2. Why am I involved? Because over time, I've become increasingly concerned by the erosion of the voices of visually impaired people in decision-making. Back in the 60s, blind people literally chained themselves to the railings of RNIBHQ, demanding a say in the services they relied upon. Today, the Charity Commission tells RNIB that blind trustees were partly to blame for governance failures, saying they lack the necessary skills. That's outrageous, right? Why wasn't the failure with trustee recruitment processes? Why assume that blindness itself means incompetence? Question 3. The signposting obsession. I've seen charity after charity dropping real services and replacing them with signposting. But charities exist to fill the gaps in statutory services. If everyone's just signposting, where exactly are we being signposted to? Soon enough, you'll be able to ask AI to do that. And when that happens, the signposters disappear. I keep hearing we need to reach more people. No, reach is not the metric. Impact is. Is it not better to transform the lives of 400 people than to reach 4,000 with nothing but a leaflet? Question 4. What exactly is my problem? Reading the evidence, my opinion is this. The society is moving towards signposting and research led by people who, frankly, don't live with sight loss and don't understand it. They seem to believe our lives are defined by tragedy, that a cure will fix everything. I've been hearing a cure in 25 years for decades. I don't need anyone to save me. I need services that help me live my life today. Question 5. Is this blackmail? Some have suggested that our promise to keep investigating until wrongs are righted amounts to blackmail. Absolutely not. I'm not demanding any single solution. If they want to offer settlements, fine. If they want a proper, independent investigation, great. If they can find another fair resolution, perfect. But right now, staff with over 10 years' service have been dismissed for gross misconduct after a process we allege didn't meet even the most basic standards of fairness or transparency. They put people's backs to the wall, took everything from them, and now they're surprised those same people are fighting back? Spare me. Question-ish 6. A word to Ed Holloway. Ed, if you're listening, it is my genuinely held belief, based on hours of your emails, meeting transcripts, radio interviews, and leaked documents, that you are an insecure, emotional, and vindictive leader. I've heard it from people at multiple organizations. You lead through fear and intimidation. This podcast exists because people feel they have no voice under your leadership. That's not blackmail, that's accountability. We both know what you've done. You will be in no doubt. Now you just have to decide when you'll develop some humility and we can all get off of this roller coaster. Question 7. The High Court rumours. Yes. The regional services team did go to the High Court on the 31st of July, meeting the Honourable Mr. Justice Mellor. I've seen the emails, I've read the transcripts. The injunction wasn't granted not because the case lacked merit, but because the team applied without notice. And when the judge went on holiday that same afternoon, the paperwork got delayed. Rumours that this never happened? Nonsense. The society's solicitors can easily verify that the hearing took place and that the judge went on vacation through the systems they already have access to. There's going to be a lot of egg on some very highly paid faces when that case pack lands on their desks in the next week or two. Question 8. Avoiding accountability. Another rumour suggests that affected staff have consistently been trying to dodge responsibility. Let's be clear. After carefully analysing thousands of pages of evidence, here's what I believe happened. Emma Malcolm was given control over services as well as fundraising. Serious concerns were raised about her competence at the highest levels. Since Ed Holloway arrived, the people raising those concerns have been silenced, sacked, or pushed out. The redundancy process? It looks to me like it was designed backwards. Start with the people you want gone, then build the process to make it happen. When staff asked for the business case, the data, or any evidence behind the £450,000 savings claim, management refused. Every single time. That's not how redundancy is supposed to work. UK law requires transparency, so staff can propose alternatives. Instead, management treated every question as insubordination and obstruction. If the case exists, present it. If it doesn't, admit it. Question 9. Am I lying? N-O. Emphatically not. I keep hearing from Macula Society employees telling me that Macula Unredacted is being accused of lying, of being selective, of being motivated by a desire to harm the charity, and most bizarrely, that I'm a former member of staff. Everything I've said is true and evidenced. Sue me for libel if you don't believe me. Watch how fast that case collapses. We've actually been pretty balanced here, presenting even the facts that don't show the team in the best light. Meanwhile, management redact every scrap of evidence that helps the defence, and then accuse us of being selective. It is an absolute farce. And for the record, I've never worked for the Macula Society. I've never even worked for a charity. I have, however, spent a lifetime investing in the sight loss sector, and I know plenty of people inside the Macula Society who've watched this whole saga unfold. And no, we're not out to harm the charity. Management have made this a choice between the society's reputation, their own reputations, and the ability of long-serving staff to ever work in this sector again. The idea that we're trying to burn the place down is a conceit as self-serving as it is disappointing. And finally, being accused of telling a one-sided story by the same management team who literally placed a senior leader next to every remaining regional manager at Wednesday's meeting, so they couldn't talk to anyone, would almost be funny if it wasn't such a stark reminder of the cognitive dissonance running through this whole mess. Question 10. Damaging the charity? Finally, some say this podcast is harming the cause. No, this leadership team are the ones being cavalier. For 5 months, staff tried every internal route to get someone to pause, reflect, and reconsider before things turned toxic. When you're sacked for allegations of bullying the disabled after a process your solicitor calls one of the strongest unfair dismissal cases I've seen in 25 years, you don't just roll over to protect the reputation of the people who fired you. The board's job is to hold leadership accountable. Staff don't owe their silence to anyone. Now, a bit of housekeeping. Our producer Stan fixed the email server by breaking it completely. That's right, Stan, I'm looking straight at you. He keeps harking back to a simpler time when computers were all pistons and gaskets. Anyway, please hold off sending new emails until Tuesday the 16th of September, when we should finally be back online. And now, last but not least, we're looking for anyone who has worked with the following members of the Macula Society's senior leadership team in previous roles: Ed Holloway, Emma Malcolm, Anthony Thorne, and Jessica Kirby. Scandals like this don't appear out of nowhere. We want to understand the origin story. We'll be back Monday, 15th September, with Episode 2, digging into the 24 months before Ed Holloway joined. I'd urge all Macula Society employees to join Unite the Union over the weekend. We're building a movement, and we'd love you to be part of it. Let's make sure that all future organisational changes can only happen with staff consultation and agreement. Until then, try not to trample on anyone's employment rights.